back against the wall, his eyes vacant and sleepy. The door opened, and the men came down the steps, talking in low, excited tones. Again, Bigger noticed that they were watching him. Britton also came back.
"Say, why can't we talk to this boy?" one demanded.
"There's nothing he can tell you," Britton said.
"But he can tell us what he saw. After all, he drove the car last night."
"Okay with me," Britton said. "But Mr. Dalton's told you everything."
One of the men walked over to Bigger.
"Say, Mike, you think this Erlone fella did this?"
"My name ain't Mike," Bigger said resentfully.
"Oh, I don't mean no harm," the man said. "But do you think he did it?"
"Answer his questions, Bigger," Britton said.
Bigger was sorry he had taken offense. He could not afford to get angry now. And he had no need to be angry. Why should he be angry with a lot of fools? They were looking for the girl, and the girl was 10 feet from them, burning. He had killed her, and they did not know it. He would let them call him Mike.
"I don't know, sir," he said.
"Come on, tell us what happened."
"I only work here, sir," Bigger said.
"Don't be afraid. Nobody's going to hurt you."
"Mr. Britton can tell you," Bigger said.
The men shook their heads and walked away.
"Good God, Britton," said one of the men. "All we've got in this kidnapping is that a letter was found, heirlooms to be released, the letter was signed by Red, and there was a hammer and sickle emblem on it. That doesn't make sense. Give us some more details."
"Listen, you guys," Britton said. "Give the old man a chance. He's trying to get his daughter back alive. He's giving you a big story. Now wait."
"Tell us straight now. When was that girl last seen?"
Bigger listened to Britton tell the story all over again. He listened carefully to every word Britton said and to the tone of voice in which the men asked their questions, for he wanted to know if any of them suspected him. But they did not. All of their questions pointed to Jan.
"But Britton," asked one of the men, "why did the old man want this Erlone released?"
"Figure it out for yourself," Britton said.
"Then he thinks Erlone had something to do with the snatching of his daughter and wanted him out so he could give her back?"
"I don't know," Britton said.
"Oh, come on, Britton."
"Use your imagination," Britton said.
Two more of the men buttoned their coats, pulled their hats low over their eyes, and left. Bigger knew that they were going to phone in more information to their papers. They were going to tell about Jan's trying to convert him to communism. The communist literature Jan had given him. The rum. The half-packed trunk being taken down to the station. And lastly, about the kidnap note and the demand for $10,000. The men looked round the basement with flashlights. Bigger still leaned against the wall. Britton sat on the steps. The fire whispered in the furnace. Bigger knew that soon he would have to clean the ashes out, for the fire was not burning as hotly as it should. He would do that as soon as some of the excitement died down and all of the men left.
"It's pretty bad, huh, Bigger?" Britton asked.
"Yes, sir."
"I'd bet $1,000,000 that this is Jan's smart idea."
Bigger said nothing. He was limp all over. He was standing up here against this wall by some strength not his own. Hours passed. He had given up trying to exert himself anymore. He could no longer call up any energy. So he just forgot it and found himself coasting along. It was getting a little chilly. The fire was dying. The draft could scarcely be heard. Then the basement door burst open suddenly, and one of the men who had gone to telephone came in, his mouth open, his face wet and red from the snow.
"Say," he called.
"Yeah?"
"What is it?"
"My city editor just told me that that Erlone fellow won't leave jail."
For a moment, the strangeness of the news made them all stare silently. Bigger roused himself, and tried to make out just what it meant. Then someone asked the question he longed to ask.
Won't leave? What you mean?
Well, this Erlone refused to go when they told him that Mr. Dalton had requested his release. It seems he had got wind of the kidnapping and said that he didn't want to go out.
That means he's guilty, said Britton. He doesn't want to leave jail because he knows they'll shadow him and find out where the girl is, see? He's scared.
What else?
Well, this Erlone says he's got a dozen people to swear that he did not come here last night.
Bigger's body stiffened, and he leaned forward slightly.
That's a lie, Britton said. This boy here saw him.
Is that right, boy? Bigger hesitated. He suspected a trap. But if Jan really had an alibi, then he had to talk. He had to steer them away from himself.
Yes, sir?
Well, somebody's lying. That Erlone fella says that he can prove it.
Prove hell, Britton said.
He's just got some of his red friends to lie for him, that's all.
But what in hell's the good of his not wanting to leave jail? Asked one of the men.
He says if he stays in, they can't possibly say he's mixed up in this kidnapping business. He said this boy's lying. He claims they told him to say these things in order to blacken his name and reputation. He swears the family knows where the girl is and that this thing is a stunt to raise a cry against the Reds.
The men gathered round Bigger.
Say, boy, come on with the dope now. Was that guy really here last night?
Yes, sir. He was here all right.
You saw him?
Yes, sir.
Where?
I drove him and Miss Dalton up here in the car. We went upstairs together to get the trunk.
And you left him here?
Yes, sir.
Bigger's heart was pounding, but he tried to keep his face and voice under control. He did not want to seem unduly excited over these new developments. He was wondering if Jan could really prove that he had not been here last night. And he was thinking the question in his own mind when he heard someone ask,
Who has this Erlone got to prove he was not here last night?
He says he met some friend of his when he got on the streetcar last night, and he says he went to a party after he left Miss Dalton at 2:30.
Where was the party?
Somewhere on the north side.
Say, if what he says is true, then there's something fishy here.
Nah, said Britton. I'll bet he went to his pals, the ones he planned all of this with.
Sure. Why wouldn't they alibi for him?
So you really think he did it?
Hell yes, Britton said. These Reds will do anything and they stick together.
Sure, he's got an alibi. Why shouldn't he have one? He's got enough pals working for him.
His wanting to stay in jail's nothing but a dodge. But he's not so smart. He thinks that his gag will work and leave him free of suspicion, but it won't.
The talk stopped abruptly as the door at the head of the stairs opened. Peggy's head came through.
You gentlemen want some coffee? She asked.
Sure. Atta, gal.
I'll bring some down in just a minute, she said, closing the door.
Who is she?
Mrs. Dalton's cook and housekeeper, Britton said.
She know anything about all this?
Nah.
Again, the men turned to Bigger. He felt this time he had to say something more to them. Jan was saying that he was lying, and he had to wipe out doubt in their minds. They would think that he knew more than he was telling if he did not talk. After all, their attitude toward him so far made him feel that they did not consider him as being mixed up in the kidnapping. He was just another black, ignorant Negro to them. The main thing was to keep their minds turned in another direction, Jan's direction, or that of Jan's friends.
Say, one of the men asked, coming close to him and placing a foot upon the edge of the trunk. Did this Erlone fellow talk to you about communism?
Yes, sir.
Oh, Britton exclaimed.
What? I forgot. Let me show you fellows the stuff he gave the boy to read.
Britton stood up, his face flushed with eagerness. He ran his hands into his pocket and pulled forth the batch of pamphlets that Jan had given Bigger and held them up for all to see. The men again got their bulbs and flashed their lightning to take pictures of the pamphlets. Bigger could hear their hard breathing. He knew that they were excited. When they finished, they turned to him again.
Say, boy, was this guy drunk?
Yes, sir.
And the girl, too?
Yes, sir.
He took the girl upstairs when they got here?
Yes, sir.
Say, boy, what do you think of public ownership? Do you think the government ought to build houses for people to live in?
Bigger blinked.
Sir?
Well, what do you think of private property?
I don't own any property, no, sir, Bigger said.
He's a dumb cluck. He doesn't know anything, one of the men whispered in a voice loud enough for Bigger to hear.
There was silence. Bigger leaned against the wall, hoping that this would satisfy them for a time at least. The draft could not be heard in the furnace now at all. The door opened again, and Peggy came into view, carrying a pot of coffee in one hand and a folding card table in the other. One of the men went up the steps and met her, took the table, opened it, and placed it for her. She set the pot upon it. Bigger saw a thin spout of steam jutting from the pot and smelt the good scent of coffee. He wanted some, but he knew that he should not ask with the white men waiting to drink.
Thank you, sirs, Peggy mumbled, looking humbly round at the strange faces of the men. I'll get the sugar and cream and some cups.
Say, boy, Britton said, tell the men how Jan made you eat with him.
Yeah, tell us about it. Is it true?
Yes, sir.
You didn't want to eat with him, did you?
No, sir.
Did you ever eat with white people before?
No, sir.
Did this guy, Erlone, say anything to you about white women?
Oh, no, sir.
How did you feel eating with him and Miss Dalton?
I don't know, sir. It was my job.
You didn't feel just right, did you?
Well, sir, they told me to eat and I ate. It was my job.
In other words, you felt you had to eat or lose your job?
Yes, sir,
said Bigger, feeling that this ought to place him in the light of a helpless, bewildered man.
Good God, said one of the men. What a story, don't you see? These Negroes want to be left alone, and these Reds are forcing them to live with them, see? Every wire in the country will carry it. This is better than Loeb and Leopold, said one.
Say, I'm slanting this to the primitive Negro who doesn't want to be disturbed by white civilization.
A swell idea.
Say, is this Erlone really a citizen?
That's an angle.
Mention his foreign-sounding name.
Is he Jewish?
I don't know.
This is good enough as it is. You can't have everything you want.
It's classic.
It's a natural.
Then, before Bigger knew it, the men had their bulbs in their hands again, aiming at him. He hung his head slowly, slowly, so as not to let them know that he was trying to dodge them.
Hold up a little, boy. Stand straight. Look over this way. Now that's it.
Yes. The police would certainly have enough pictures of him. He thought it rather bitterly, smiling a smile that did not reach his lips or eyes.
This ends Disc 7. Native Son, Disc 8.
Peggy came back with her arms full of cups, saucers, spoons, a jar of cream, and a bowl of sugar.
Here it is, sirs. Help yourselves.
She turned to Bigger.
There's not enough heat upstairs.
You'd better clean those ashes out and make a better fire.
Yes'm.
Clean the fire out. Good God. Not now. Not with the men standing around. He did not move from his place beside the wall. He watched Peggy walk back up the stairs and close the door behind her. Well, he had to do something. Peggy had spoken to him in the presence of these men, and for him not to obey would seem odd. and even if they did not say anything about it, Peggy herself would soon come back and ask about the fire. Yes, he had to do something. He walked to the door of the furnace and opened it. The low bed of fire was red hot, but he could tell from the weak blast of heat upon his face that it was not as hot as it ought to be, not as hot as it had been when he had shoved Mary in. He was trying to make his tired brain work fast. What could he do to avoid bothering with the ashes? He stooped and opened the lower door. The ashes, white and gray, were piled almost level with the lower grate. No air could get through. Maybe he could sift the ashes down more and make that do until the men left. He would try it. He caught hold of the handle and worked it to and fro, seeing white ashes and red embers falling into the bottom of the furnace. Behind him, he could hear the men's talk and the tinkle of their spoons against the cups. Well, there. He had gotten some of the ashes down out of the stove, but they choked the lower bin and still no air could get through. He would put some coal in. He shut the doors of the furnace and pulled the lever for coal. There was the same loud rattle of coal against the tin sides of the chute. The interior of the furnace grew black with coal, but the draft did not roar and the coal did not blaze. God damn. He stood up and looked helplessly into the furnace. Ought he to try to slip out of here and leave this whole foolish thing right now? No. There was no use of being scared. He had a chance to get that money. Put more coal in. It would burn after a while. He pulled the lever for still more coal. Inside the furnace, he saw the coal beginning to smoke. There were faint wisps of white smoke at first. Then the smoke grew dark, bulging out. Digger's eyes smarted, watered. He coughed. The smoke was rolling from the furnace now in heavy, billowing gray clouds, filling the basement. Digger backed away, catching a lungful of smoke. He bent over, coughing. He heard the men coughing. He had to do something about those ashes, and quickly. With his hand stretched before him, he groped in the corner for the shovel, found it, and opened the lower door of the furnace. The smoke surged out, thick and acrid. God damn.
You'd better do something about those ashes, boy, one of the men called. That fire can't get any air, Bigger.
It was Britton's voice.
Yes, sir,
Bigger mumbled. He could scarcely see. He stood still, his eyes closed and stinging, his lungs heaving, trying to expel the smoke. He held onto the shovel, wanting to move, to do something, but he did not know what.
Say, you, get some of those ashes out of there. What are you trying to do, smother us?
I'm getting them out,
Bigger mumbled, not moving from where he stood. He heard a cup smash on the concrete floor, and a man cursed.
I can't see. The smoke's got my eyes.
Bigger heard someone near him. Then someone was tugging at the shovel in his hands. He held on to it desperately, not wanting to let it go, feeling that if he did so, he was surrendering his secret, his life.
Here, give me that shovel. I'll help you.
A man coughed.
No, sir. I can do it,
Bigger said.
Come on! Let go!
His fingers loosened about the shovel.
Yes, sir,
he said, not knowing what else to say. Through the clouds of smoke, he heard the man clanging the shovel round inside of the ash bin. He coughed and stepped back, his eyes blazing, as though fire had leaped into them. Behind him, the other men were coughing. He opened his eyes and strained to see what was happening. He felt that there was suspended just above his head a huge weight that would soon fall and crush him. His body, despite the smoke and his burning eyes and heaving chest, was flexed taut. He wanted to lunge at the man and take the shovel from him, lam him across the head with it, and bolt from the basement. But he stood still, hearing the babble of voices and the clanging of the shovel against iron. He knew that the man was digging frantically at the ashes in the bin, trying to clean out as much as possible, so that air could pass up through the grates, pipes, chimney, and out into the night. He heard the man yell, "Open that door! I'm choking!" There was a scuffle of feet,